Okay, we have about 20 minutes, 25 minutes for questions, and I will take your hands in the order in which I see them. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for your talk. Quick question about the Sheikh Jarrah Youth Forum in Gaza. The Sheikh Jarrah Youth Forum, the Sheikh Youth Forum in Gaza, it was closed down last year by Hamas. I was just wondering if you know, the Sheikh Youth Forum in Gaza was closed down last year by Hamas. I was just wondering what you knew about.
You mean Sheikh?
Sorry, apologies, I haven't slept for a little bit. Youth Forum was closed down in Gaza last year by Hamas, and I was wondering what the state of NGOs in Gaza is currently, as well as your own NGO.
Thank you.
We'll do one question at a time, Raji. You answer him, and we'll go on to the next.
But I think we take some questions if you don't mind.
You want to do it that way? Okay,
yeah.
Fine. Oh, that's fine.
Sorry.
Sir? Yes.
When I visited the Simoni neighborhood last November, they were reconstructing much of that area. How were they able to do that? Where did they get the money? And how were they able to get the building materials in?
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. And that'll be it.
Would you comment on changes in the region, Turkey, the Arab Spring, and what is your opinion as it could possibly change things with Palestine?
Okay, let's do those three and then we'll come on.
Thank you. We represent Sharik. I represent Sharik as we are vis-a-vis Hamas and what has happened, I mean, with them. And they shut down, I mean, Sharik. And the allegations, all of it, I mean, totally unfounded, and I don't like it, I don't respect it, and it's with no existence. So that's something, I mean, really sad, bad, ugly, and we are against it, and we say that straightforward in Gaza, not in Boston. Vis-a-vis Palestinian civil society, we are stronger than anybody. We have been born under the occupation, so it wasn't easy delivery. And thanks for the occupation who made Palestinian civil society bones so harsh and so strong, because we paid and paid heavily to have a strong Palestinian civil society where we are very proud of. When the occupation was there, wasn't able to crush Palestinian civil society. When Arafat was the king of Palestine, he tried to crush civil society, and he wasn't able to do that. Hamas or any other body wouldn't be able to crush Palestinian civil society. It was before PA, and will continue as genuine, integrated part of the Palestinian people and aspiration. We have some problems, I mean, with Hamas, but for example, I mean, our organization functions in absolutely free way. I mean, we have no restriction whatsoever. They get mad, angry, they attack us, I mean, sometimes, occasionally. Fine, we are there, and we existing, and we do our mission and omission. We don't have ever, never double standard. Our mission and omission in our Palestinian society, to speak truth to power, to say it up, and not to be politically correct to any political party. If we are shameful of something, we do it, we say it. That doesn't delegitimize Hamas at all. Second, about Samouni family, of course, we represent them and the war crimes perpetrated against them. We are not their agents, I mean, economically. And as you are aware, the tunnels business in Gaza very flourishing. Meaning, I mean, we have incredible way to keep surviving through smuggling. I mean, you know, goods back and forth, which is basic, fundamental. There is some basic reconstruction, I mean, for people just to keep surviving at that part of the world. But if you are investigating, you know, where they get the money from, I don't think it's from the IDF. I don't think so. Now, about the revolutionary changes in the region, I have a new hat since March. I don't know whether that's bad or good. I'm president of the Arab Organization for Human Rights. The Arab Organization for Human Rights established in 1983. It's the first Arab human rights organization in the region. And the Kafka thing in it, I mean, the first conference of it was in Limassol, Cyprus, because none of the Arab states were ready, I mean, to host that. And it includes, I mean, the creme de la creme of the Arab human rights activists and people who believe in rule of law, democracy, and the human rights in the region. Of course, we worked on that, I mean, very hard, and believe me that for us, what's going in the Arab world, it's like a daydream. I never, ever in my life realized this is going to happen in my lifetime. I never realized that. But that's, I mean, the chemistry of things, not the mathematics. And 3 weeks ago, I was in Tunisia attending the first conference of the Tunisian League for Human Rights, which is one of our members and which has played, I mean, very major role in the Tunisian revolution. And I didn't imagine, you know, Mukhtar Tarifi, the president of the league, giving his speech from the place where Ben Ali used to give. I mean, it's really, I mean, for me, like a dream in daylight. I mean, but this has happened, I mean, and it can happen. And it happened in wonderful, civilized, eloquent way. Real popular uprising for people who believed in democracy and rule of law and justice. And they were able to do it after long, long suffering by these people. In Egypt, the pyramids moved after 7,000 years. Read my lips. After 7,000 years, the pyramids moved. Real revolution in Egypt. Of course, I mean, there's nothing perfect. And revolutions have no ready recipe. We are there, and it should go, you know, like 100. There is setbacks, there is back and forth. I can talk for hours, you know, about nitty-gritty details, I mean, going on there. But what I can assure you, what had happened in Tunisia, in Egypt, irreversible. And it's going straightforward. There is many enemies. But I can assure you, there is real, hardcore, uncompromisable for basic, fundamental principles. Syria, friend of mine, I mean, Burhan Ghalioun, is one of the top intellect Syrian figures. He has a statement. He said one day, every Syrian who left his home to demonstrate, he knew in advance that he can pay his life for that. What's going on in Syria for the last 7 months is every day, across Syria, people demonstrating against this rotten dictator, bloody leadership. It's fantastic. Every day the Syrians being 20, 30, 40, 70 martyrs, and they have no compromise. It's not going to stop. And it's going to work. Yemen, everybody thought, how this tribal society, you know, can go anywhere. Actually, every day passing, this tribalism melting, and this young, wonderful generation taking more and more the leadership. Of course, what had happened in Bahrain, drastic setback, ugly. Bahrain sized like Gaza, but they have the biggest marine base for United States outside United States. That's why the Saudis were instructed to take over and to suppress it. It's shame. But that doesn't change the fact that there is a real movement and it didn't stop Bahrain. I think we are witnessing, by all meanings and standards, a real spring. This can happen in Libya, I mean, a few months ago, and to get rid of al-Qaddafi. Al-Qaddafi is still there, and still protected, not by anybody, but by the Algerian support and protection and secret services. But definitely, I mean, the situation in Libya has been ruled out. The rest is matter of details. I mean, it can take 1 month or two. So all this will reflect itself sooner or later on very genuine support for Palestinian cause and Palestinian people. And this is, I mean, a new reason for Palestinians to be optimistic in the future.
Okay. You, sir, then you, and then you.
It was announced yesterday that 1,000 new members are going to be added to the National Security Force in the West Bank. This is a force that was set up by the United States and Israel 5 years ago under General Dayton to provide, apparently, security for the region in the face of the rise of Hamas. He's been accused of numerous human rights violations as well as suppressing dissent, especially during Operation Cast Lead. And apparently it's a force that is, all the new members are going to have to be individually approved, not only by the PA, but by the United States and Israel as well. So is there enough attention being paid to the violation of Palestinian human rights by Palestinian security organizations and quasi paramilitary organizations that are apparently closely allied with the United States and Israel and funded and trained by the United States and Israel?
That's a very good point, and thank you for it. I would just refer you to our website, and you will read there, I mean, our criticism in many, many occasions for the violations committed by the security forces in the West Bank. You are right, and I absolutely endorse what you stated and what you said. Though, the Europeans especially and the Americans don't like to talk about human rights violations in the West Bank. We are based in Gaza. We have our office in Ramallah, and I can assure you that we are in the forefront of criticizing human rights violations, whether in Gaza or in Ramallah.
Thank you, Mr. Sarani. I've been spending a few weeks talking to many of the eminent scholars here in Harvard and in Boston about this problem. And a number of them, not all of them, a number of them believe that the two-state solution, the facts on the ground that you were describing, what you described as the actions towards the sort of annexation or cutting off of Jerusalem, are such that the two-state solution now is now actually impossible to achieve. Do you share that view? And if so, if not, perhaps you could explain why you still believe that a two-state solution.
The PLO Charter states in a clear-cut way that Palestinians were seeking one-state solution where Jews, Christian, Muslims, you know, live together. Ulf Balma and Bron Kreisky achieved President Arafat, and they pressured him very hard, and they said to him, "Well, listen, nobody will understand this rightly in the West. And everybody, you know, understand this as if you are intending to abolish the state of Israel. What you have to do, really, I mean, to accept and to be respected by international community and having the support, you have to go for two-state solution." So after 10 years, I mean, 74, PLO changed the mandate, and they said, "We want two-state solution." And then, I mean, Ulf Palma has been assassinated, definitely not by a Palestinian. We continued with that, and when President Arafat and late Rabin, I mean, concluded also accords, which was supposed to lead, I mean, to two-state solution, as it has been stated, I mean, very clearly, late Rabin was assassinated once again, I mean, not by a Palestinian. And when Chomsky, Azmi Bshara, Edward Said, and others, you know, wrote and they said, "We want one-state solution," Israel was saying, look, Palestinians wants to destroy the state of Israel, and they want to abolish, I mean, the structure. All the way along, Israel and the Israelis said, we want the purity of the Jewish state. We don't want Palestinians. Okay, I mean, they want to have that. I mean, it's their problem. We wanted to have that strategical compromise by having this Palestinian state on this land, 22% of historical Palestine. I personally would love to be a citizen in one state solution, even fifth class citizen. Honestly. But they are not giving us this credit. I mean, you know, we would love to. I mean, we are not really racist. I mean, I don't think God is stupid. I mean, when he put all these three religions, you know, in one small place called Palestine, historical Palestine. But it's very normal, the natural thing, I mean, to have one state, I mean, there. But if we say that, we are calling for the destruction and the abolition of the state of Israel. Nobody will take us, I mean, seriously. Now, what this Israeli right is doing, I'm telling you, I mean, de facto and through this fait accompli policy, they're imposing this. But I don't think, you know, it will be right, I mean, for us. Israel should know what they want. If they want to have one state solution, we are happy with that and we don't mind it. If they want to have two state solution, we are happy and we don't mind that. But we are sick and tired and we cannot tolerate anymore this de facto apartheid system, this state of social economical suffocation, this prolonged belligerent occupation, which is the last occupation on earth in the 21st century. Of course, I mean, we had a great hope when the Egyptian revolution prevailed on 12th of February this year. And we expected swift, I mean, direct move towards Gaza and easing, I mean, you know, the border crossing movement. Of course, I mean, I have to say one clear, bold thing. Egypt, it's not responsible on the siege of Gaza. It's Israel. It's the occupation. It's the Israeli policies towards Gazans. They are the body which we should hold accountable. And when we talk about Egypt, we talk about Egypt as a member of the signatory of the 4th Geneva Convention and as the big brother, I mean, for Palestinians and their responsibility in easing, I mean, the life of Gazans. Israel, Egypt extremely sensitive for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And they believe in Egypt, unpolitically speaking, not legally, that Israel's ultimate goal to throw Gaza to Egypt and push Gazans to Egypt. And they cannot tolerate that responsibility. The foreign minister, Nabil Arabi, who's first class, I mean, lawyer and first class human rights activist, he said three things, among them about the siege of Gaza. He said this is a collective punishment, inhumane, illegal, and should be ending. And he gave a date for that, 14th of April. I think he paid heavily for that, and he was, you know, directed to the Arab League because Americans and the Israelis were mad of this statement, and they didn't like it, Just to conclude, the situation at the Egyptian-Palestinian border, business as usual, nothing really changing. I mean, still, till today, not less than 550 who are able to cross from Gaza to Egypt. You need a lot of time to do that, and you need a previous coordination, and you have to wait a period between 1 to 2 months in order to have your turn enabled, in order to cross to the other side. So nothing really, I mean, in this regard changed. I personally don't anticipate any changes. Yeah, before real stability in Egypt after the elections of the parliament and the president and having the constitution. I mean, these things will come later, not now.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I fear that no matter what the results of the UN vote will be, there might be an escalation of violence. There might be an escalation of violence in the region. Do you share these concerns? What is your anticipation post-UN vote?
But could you please repeat the question? I didn't get you.
Yeah,
I don't understand why violence. I mean, you have a very grim, bleak situation on the ground, as I described it, and as our president, I mean, described it. And I'm telling you something. As Gazan, and as somebody, I mean, who's living there, I think Hamas made a miracle by all meaning and standards. And I think Palestinian people made a miracle. Can you imagine, I mean, people who are disconnected totally from the outside world? Complete generation have no connection with the outside world. Isolated, suppressed, oppressed, bombed, destroyed. Their fate and destiny, I mean, you know, have no horizon whatsoever. And we don't have Al-Qaeda. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine? I mean, the Americans are the masters of containment policy. They are the one who created that after the Second World War. And they are the ones who made it, I mean, Europe, not to go, I mean, to the other direction, to the socialist bloc, through Marshall and project and so on. You have the counter argument 180 degrees carried against Palestinians in Gaza. In Gaza, you still, I mean, can open your door and leave it, and nobody, you know, will attack you, nobody will rob you. It's incredible human situation. And if I'm proud of something, really, I'm proud of my people, how with this percentage of poverty, of unemployment, with this suppression, oppression, blood, bomb, siege, people behaving in a civilized, normal way. We say enough is enough. We are not the lovers of the occupation. We want to have an end for this criminal occupation. We want to have an end for these war crimes, for these crimes against humanity. We want to have an end for the siege. We want to have an end for this de facto apartheid system in the West Bank. We want to have an end for this ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem. With all that, people say, no. Okay, we want accountability for war criminals on the national level in Israel or through universal jurisdiction or through Goldstone Report. No. We want rule of law. No, you have to have rule of jungle. This cannot be one-way ticket. You have to understand that. Now, they are pushing you one-way ticket to be devil. And once and again, I'm telling you, I'm very proud of my people. They still restraining themselves. But we are human beings. And nobody on this earth should expect Palestinians be good victims. First article in the civil political covenant, civil political human rights covenant, it states in a clear-cut way about the right of self-determination. It's a right, not a gift. And you do it. It's your self-determination. If any expect Palestinians be good victims, I think I'm the first who should be ashamed of that. We are a free, committed people for peace and justice and independence, and we will fight for that. You know what Palestinians do understand? That U.S. government do provide full legal political immunity for Israel and for the Israeli occupation and for the Israeli war crimes and crimes against humanity. I'm not a spokesman on behalf of Palestinian people. I represent myself. I'm not an elected body. But I'm living the mathematics and the chemistry of that part of the world, I think. And, you know, for me as a lawyer and as a human rights activist, either in Gaza, Palestine, in the region, I'm appalled and shocked, and I can't understand why United States of America do that. I mean, why United States of America against the rule of law and for the rule of jungle? Why they protect the criminals? Why they protect those who commit war crimes? I don't understand. We go to the... I'm telling you, I don't want to talk politics. I'm a lawyer. And I represent the clients. And I want for them justice. Justice according to rule of law. And I go to the Israeli courts. And I'm 35 years doing that. It's not a moody thing. I never thought justice can be achieved under occupation. But we did, as the Americans say rightly, you have to use the system. And we cannot, you know, just say Arabic vomiting rhetoric. We hate the Israelis, we don't like them, never ever just... No, I mean, we do it through very professional way. And we never achieve justice in Israel. Through thousands of cases I represented with my Israeli counterparts and lawyers and the human rights organization, I was able to win 17. Definitely not because I'm first-class lawyer, but there is some conscience in some judge or some grave mistake committed by the prosecutor. Now with all that, we wanted to, when you exhaust national remedy, you go to universal jurisdiction, meaning you use universal jurisdiction, which is part of the Fourth Geneva Convention when it becomes part of the national laws. So we filed cases in Madrid. So they pressured. United States pressured these countries in Spain, UK, to change the laws, meaning you are pushing that victims have no justice and criminals having no accountability. What's happening? What message you are conveying? More, when you want to go and to discuss Goldstone at the Human Rights Council, believe me, not as short-sighted Gazan, but my heart was broken. This is first class human rights legal report based on facts and standards and conclusion. Just very simple. Why U.S. and Europe vote against? Why they keep protecting the criminals? Now, what the fault we have been punished by the quartet? Why we have been punished by the quartet? Because we made the best elections ever in the Arab world in January 25th, 2007. President Carter, I don't think any suspect his credibility. All international human rights organizations, with no exception, said this is first-class elections. We made it before the Arab Spring began. Why they shoot at us? Why they shoot on the forces who believe in rule of law, democracy, and the human rights? And then you say, well, but this, you know, United States position, and it should be respected. I mean, in anything U.S. do have a position, really, it's just anti-Palestinian, pro-Israel blindly. We want them to support, you know, Israel when they are right, when it's just. I don't mind, I mean, you know, to support entirely the security of Israel as they are doing all the way along, but they have no right to deny Palestinian the state and support the occupation, especially when the occupation is a criminal and doing war crimes, crimes against humanity in the daylight. We have intern at PCHR in Gaza. She's American from the Midwest, fantastic, nice, young lawyer. She's there and she's getting along. I don't think, I mean, she bothered working with us, I mean, for the last year or so. I don't think the image of the American people ugly. And I'm telling you, thanks for American civil society, thanks for the American people, thanks for the free, committed, free Americans, whom, I mean, Palestinians know of them, and they know them. Thanks for somebody like Rachel Corey, who were just naive as angel, thinking of justice and defending civilians, and paid her life, I mean, when she crushed with Caterpillar. But this is, I mean, the image of the American citizen. I mean, American government is something, and American people is something else. I think people are immature enough to make this distinguish.
Sir in the back, yes.
Arab Spring in Israel also, we had a series of demonstrations against the government. I request you to comment upon the public opinion within Israel on the solution for this conflict, whether Israeli
Could you please just elaborate a bit?
Popular public opinion within Israel, whether they are for a two-state solution or one-state solution. I'm not talking about politicians who are representing the state, but
yeah.
I'm talking about the civil society of Israel as a nation.
This is not really my menu. I mean, you know. But I'll try, I mean, to answer your question. You know, my Israeli counterparts and friends, lawyers, intellectuals, academics, their heart is broken. They broke, you know, most of them. I mean, they like thinking, I mean, there is nothing would be achieved in the foreseeable future. Though we don't meet, I mean, always, I mean, occasionally, they are not allowed to come to Gaza, we are not allowed to go to Israel, and occasionally, I mean, we meet in Europe, if we are allowed to leave, I mean, Gaza, in a case, but all in all, you know, take, for example, the demonstrations which took place, you know, a couple of months ago, and some of it, I mean, still taking place, where 450,000 Israelis, I mean, were down in the streets in Tel Aviv and demonstrating against Netanyahu government. In these demonstrations, basically, you would find the most strange thing on earth. These people were demonstrating because of the prices of the apartments, because of the low income, because of the unemployment, and they are blaming the Israeli government of that, because Israeli government investing everything in the settlements. So conceptually speaking, they were demonstrating against settlements. You are having 450,000 Israelis demonstrating because the Israeli government do wrongly invest in settlements policies. I mean, that's the slogan they have. And the other thing, the slogan was Erhal, you know, Dikar, as the French say, meaning for the Tunisian and the Egyptian slogan was for their dictators. I mean, you know, leave and go away. That was, I mean, the slogan inside Tel Aviv, and it was written in Arabic, I mean, and Hebrew and English, which is, I mean, you know, winding, I mean, something in the mind. Very unfortunately, the Israeli society, very special society, I mean, I would say. And it's very hard, you know, to see the Israeli society, you know, going away from the government position, except in very specific junctures. I don't think the Israelis care anymore, you know, whether it's one or two state solution, as far they're feeling all right. And this is, I mean, what scares you. I mean, do you need another waves of suicide bombers to make them awake? Do you need blood? Do you need violence? Do you need Hezbollah? Do you need more conflict? I don't know. But all in all, the Israeli society relaxed. They don't feel, I mean, there should be, you know, something on the political level.
Could you just wait, excuse me.
The government,
as
I mean,
long as they're comfortable?
No, as long as they are comfortable and their government, I mean, doing fine. I mean, they are not really sensitive for that. They don't feel the urgency, you know, or the need, I mean, to do that. Israel, they are in the best position ever. I mean, their position, financially and economically they are flourishing. Security-wise, you know, Hamas not allowing one rocket, I mean, to leave from Gaza, and they are keeping, I mean, the truce effectively. In the West Bank, I mean, you know, things are calm and fine, and the security cracking down on any opposition groups. I mean, if I were Israel, I mean, I'm provided with full legal political immunity by United States and Europe. Why should I be bothered? I mean, you know, I'm getting along with all that. You know, I'm not in hurry, at least. You know.
Okay, we have time for two more questions. You, sir, and I. Did you have a question, ma'am? Okay, the two of you.
If it's intellectually provocative, I'm accepting it. Why you consider that provocative? I mean, it's you are on the same line like me, and I'm 100%, you know, putting not intellectually and in this room, but in Gaza. Yeah, things is straightforward. Yeah, but I'll tell you something which many, I mean, doesn't know or they don't want to know. On our website, if you go, and again, we are in Gaza, not in Boston. You will find we are condemning shooting rockets from Gaza towards Israeli populated area. Absolutely. This is not a secret. This is not something, you know, we do it and hide openly. As well, we are against any operations, against any civilian targets. In principle, whoever. Three, in a clear-cut way, we are against any one who use inhabited civilian areas in Gaza to launch rockets from it. So for us, I mean, this is not even related to the war. I mean, it was before the war. And it's clear-cut stated position.
No.
I'm just give me time. I mean, I understood fully, as I said to you, I mean, your question. And I agree with it. That's what I said before I began answering it. But I'm just talking about the first phase. The second part of the question, it's related to Goldstone Report. Goldstone Report address A and B. They address the Israeli and the Israeli occupation and the Israeli war crimes, the crimes against humanity during custodied operation. And B addressing the Palestinian authority and what had happened from the Palestinian during the time of war. Please go and read our critique on the Palestinian Authority report and on Hamas report. Please do. And you will find we are saying and suggesting very strongly in our position that these reports of the PA and Hamas didn't stand for the challenge and what has been requested from them. Our position now, when we are asking for Goldstone report, many think Goldstone asking for accountability for Israel only. It's not true. It's asking for accountability for Israel and the armed Palestinian groups who were involved in launching rockets against Israeli civilians. And we are asking Goldstone Report with both sides to go to the ICC. I don't want to see criminal leadership for the Palestinians. It's on my body. And we will fight for it. We are very romantic revolutionaries. We are dreamers of justice. I don't want to get out from criminal occupation to come under a criminal Palestinian leadership. I have been imprisoned 6 times by the Israeli occupation for doing what I'm doing. And I'm proud of it. I'm not regretting it. And I was the first Palestinian political prisoner when President Arafat came. And I'm not regretting that. So you cannot be selective. You cannot be schizophrenic. It's disastrous for me if I speak in a different way.
Yes, ma'am. It'll be the last question.
As far as I know, Hamas doesn't recognize Israel as a Jewish state. So I wanted to ask you how you think Israel, Gaza, and the Palestinian Authority can create a dialogue to achieve peace between them.
We are sick of the dialogue. We need solution. I mean, we are, Abu Mazen dialoguing with Israel for the last 40 years. And effectively, I mean, for the last 20 years, I mean, they are doing that day and night. And the result, what we achieved. I mean, once again, I mean, we are talking about basic, fundamentally primitive human rights. You know, I don't want Palestinian state. I don't want self-determination. And I don't want independence. I don't want a state. Honestly, I'm telling you, me as Rajesh, I don't want all that. Give me only 2 things. Freedom of movement between Gaza and the West Bank, and freedom of movement between Gaza and the West Bank and the outside world for goods and individuals. I don't need anything more. Law of survival. And we don't want one penny, neither from United States or the World Bank or Europe. We are hard workers. We know how to make things. Just give us a chance. We don't want. But even, you know, this has been denied. You know, Wilfinson, the ex-president of the World Bank, he was appointed as a representative of the quartet. When he was appointed, we have a meeting with him, and he said, I know you don't understand economics, but tell me, Raj, I mean, what you wish, what you dream, I mean, to see in this part of the world. And I told him, A and B, that's what I want. Freedom of movement for goods and individuals between Gaza and the West Bank and between those and the outside world. He said, what are you talking about? This is what we call it in economy, abso facto. I mean, of course, I mean, this is going to be achieved. I mean, are you serious? No, I'm talking about really, what's your dream? I said, I don't want anything more. He was there for 6 or 7 years. 7 years, I think. When he was leaving, he said to me, Raji, I'm leaving, and I have to make confession to you. I failed to make the abso facto you talked about. And I have 2 heart attacks. And I'm shameful because I'm a Jew. I mean, and we are talking about dialogue. And dialogue. And dialogue. President Obama said, we don't want process. We want conclusions. And he said about September this year, Palestinians should be entitled for a state. What we are having, once again, go to negotiations. Yeah, we love to engage in negotiations for negotiation. I don't know why they love that. We are suffering. It's on our skin. This is not intellectual experience. People are suffering. There is war crimes, crimes against humanity being perpetrated against them. You know, when you talk about the siege in Iraq, there was a siege, embargo, but for goods. Never ever the Iraqi people were denied movement. We are the first embargo on earth for individuals and goods, no right of movement. There isn't any precedent in history as such. With that, I mean, you know, people, yeah, His Excellency Tulin Blair, as representative of the quartet, he said, all right, I mean, the Prime Minister said, they are going to ease, you know, this siege. We have to check and double check and see the list. I mean, already we have mayonnaise, we have ketchup, we have some chocolate. Fantastic. Hallelujah. So what? You know, we are denied basic. People don't have money to buy these things. It's shame on us. I mean, how can I look straight to my mom or dad if there is no medicine in the hospital, and because of the electricity, operation theater doesn't work, and they are dying in front of you? What can I tell? I mean, you know, a friend of mine whose daughter passed because she was in need for chemotherapy for her cancer, and she's in the age of my children, and she passed away because he didn't have that. These are the root facts of life. And that's what the people are, I mean, facing on day-to-day basis. It's very hard, it's very tough, and it's not easy, you know.